Welcome to Wheelchair Nerds, a podcast to connect and inform people who utilize, prescribe, and provide seating and wheel mobility equipment. I'm your host, Angie Kiger. Before we jump into today's topic, a brief reminder that the information in this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not intended to be medical, billing, or legal advice. Now, let's get to it. All right, wheelchair nerds, welcome back to another episode. We are so excited. We are talking about travel right now. In our last episode, we had Christy on talking about her travel agency, and she had her travel agent hat on. This time, we're actually brought Christy back, and we're going to have Christy put on her end user hat, because what you may or may not have noticed in the last episode, Christy actually does utilize a wheelchair, so she's going to talk about traveling as a manual wheelchair user. And then we've also got someone who uses a power wheelchair primarily at home, but sometimes travels in his manual chair. So we'll introduce Jared here in a second. But real quick, Christy, let's start with your introduction and kind of give a little bit of history so folks kind of know a bit more about you, the type of chair you use, how long you've utilized a wheelchair, and if you're comfortable, share why you use a wheelchair, that sort of stuff. So go ahead.
Hey, everyone. I'm Christy Durso. I'm the owner of Incredible Memories Travel, a functional accessibility consultant and public speaker on hospitality accessibility. I have been a full-time wheelchair user for about 4 years. I have a genetic disorder and an autoimmune disorder and a couple of things that they can't figure out because I also have a pacemaker, so I can't get an MRI. 4 years ago, my legs just went numb without warning. I got up and walked from one side of my house to the other, and by the time I got there, my right side was numb. They've never been able to definitively figure out what's going on, but they have a few ideas. So I use a Tylite manual chair with a smart drive attachment when I'm traveling so that I can give myself a little bit of help when my body gets tired or I'm going uphill or I'm dealing with really thick carpet in hotels. We all know that problem, I'm sure. I love my chair. It's been really helpful for me. I travel with it on the plane and in the hotels and everywhere else, and I try to get it in the cabin as often as possible when I'm flying, but we'll go more into detail on that later, I'm sure.
Absolutely. So Christy is playing the role of our manual wheelchair user when traveling. Sometimes she travels independently, sometimes she travels with her family. Our last episode, she called herself an adrenaline junkie, so she definitely is someone who likes to get out there and go traveling a lot and be at various adventures. Next up, we've got a gentleman who, if you've followed any of our marketing materials, you've actually seen his face, a gentleman by the name of Jared. So Jared, tell us who you are, what do you do, what's your background, all that good stuff.
Yeah, I'm Jared Nieder, and I've been injured a little over 11 years, and my wife and I run Positively Paralyzed, and we try to build community online and in person. We hold community events here in Louisville. The latest one was with the women's professional soccer team. You know, we had over 100 people at that event. We had a party before that. It was around 200 people. And we just want to get people out of the house and bring them together. You know, it's our opinion that life takes place outside of your house. And we want to get people out and doing that, not just in their communities, but traveling too. So traveling is a big part of our platform.
Nice. All right. Got some experts on the line here. This is exciting. Okay. So guys, we're going to do two episodes with both of you guys. The first one, this one's going to focus on kind of setting yourself up for success. We know that not everything goes anywhere close to perfect when we travel. So we're going to have another episode, you guys, where we're going to share kind of like the uh-oh moments and how did we overcome those sorts of moments. But this one, we really want to talk about like setting yourself up for success as someone who uses a manual chair and someone who uses a power chair. And so we're going to kind of walk through, we're going to say we have the scenario. So your scenario is that you're planning a trip to, it's got to be out of the country. So you have to use an airplane, have to use ground transportation, and obviously need a hotel accommodation. So let's start from the front end. Christy, this is an easy no-brainer for you. But when you first, as someone who uses a manual wheelchair, Christy, when you start to think about your destination, you haven't booked anything yet, but let's talk about how do you choose like your destinations? What would go into your considerations for that?
I think the destination is based on two completely different things. The first is, what are you interested in? I don't think we should just be picking destinations based on how accessible do I think that destination is. I think the first question is, what is your interest? What is drawing you to travel to that destination? And that's the first and foremost thing to consider. And then once you decide that, then you can start narrowing down the destination by its accessibility. For example, somebody who wants to go ziplining and to hold sloth, may think that they need to stay somewhere that is definitely a first world country and has all kinds of things accessible to them, but they'd be surprised to know that the little third world country of Honduras on the island of Roatan, they can do all of those things as a wheelchair user. So the first thing is to establish exactly what you're interested in doing. And then the next step is to start researching what sort of accommodations can be made. And then the other important thing that we really need to do is to evaluate exactly what we need and have all of that written out. It isn't enough to just call a destination, to call a provider and say, I'm a wheelchair user, can you accommodate me? Because their first assumption is going to be that you are a wheelchair user who can get up from your chair and take steps and that your wheelchair can fold and go under the bus. So we have three steps that are really, really critically important. The first is determining your likes and interests and where you want to go based on that. The next is determining the accessibility of the location. And the third is making a detailed list of what you can and cannot do. Are you a manual wheelchair, power wheelchair user? If you're a manual wheelchair, is your chair rigid or foldable? If you either one of those, are you able to transfer into a standard vehicle or do you need a fully accessible vehicle? Do you need a roll-in shower at your destination or do you prefer a tub? And having the list of all those questions laid out and ready to give to your tour operators, your flight, and your hotelier, all of that information is super critical for them in order to be able to appropriately accommodate you. And determining what your limitations are. Yes, I can transfer, but I'm not comfortable doing it. They need to know that so you know if you're getting a fully accessible vehicle or one that you transfer into and store your wheelchair in the back.
For sure. And I think especially when you're traveling, you know, a lot of us are prone to being like, well, I don't usually do this, but I could do this. And you need to try to stick to your routine as much as possible when you're traveling. You don't want to be pushing your comfort zone and really wearing yourself out at every turn when you're traveling. You should be focused on traveling and enjoying your destination. And for me, the first step is looking up ground transportation. The hotel, I can usually figure out. The flight, I can usually figure out. But I need to figure out, like you said, what am I doing? So do I need to rent a van or do I just need a transfer? You know, because for me, I want a wheelchair accessible vehicle. And I've really found like San Francisco, LA, Chicago, and New York are pretty much the only cities I can rely on ground transportation, public transport. Anywhere else, I need private transportation, you know, and then that really starts affecting the price of the trip because these vans are $150 a day, you know, and that's going to add $1,000 to most trips by the time it's all said and done. You tack on $100 for them getting it to the airport to you and another $100 for them picking it up. And so it's usually right at $700 to $1,000 for a van for just 3 or 4 days.
I want to add a destination to that. Vancouver is a wonderful city for wheelchair users because every single one of their minivan taxis is accessible. They have a third row in that minivan that can fold up and a ramp up the back so that any wheelchair user is able to roll into that minivan and use it. And it's the same price as the regular taxis as well. So yes, I agree with you that there are not that many destinations that have great wheelchair accessibility. But Vancouver definitely needs to be on that list and actually is one of the easiest cities to get in and out of.
Nice.
That's good to know.
Jared's like over there planning going, hey, Hannah, to his wife, we need to plan a trip to Vancouver.
Yeah, Vancouver, here we come.
So a question for you, Jared, you mentioned about wanting to rent needing to rent a van. What are some ideas? Like, how would somebody, if they're not working with someone like Christy, who is a travel agent, if they're trying to plan this on their own, like, is it just Google? Like, how do they find places to rent a wheelchair accessible van?
It is really Google. Message boards, other wheelchair users that specialize in travel, you know, following their pages, seeing where they like to go, you know, always learning from the community is a top resource for sure. But then, it's really Googling and just kind of figuring it out.
Makes sense. Okay, let's talk about, all right, we're headed to the airport. You're ready to get on the plane. Jared, we'll let you go first with this because you've probably traveled with your power chair and your manual chair. Let's talk about power. So for our folks out there that are using power chairs, we know it has been a hot topic in the news. We know legislation needs to change about that. This is actually, I was telling these guys when we're recording this, I was actually on Capitol Hill advocating with United Spinal about changing some legislation. But the reality is we can't wait for legislation to be changed. So, because if not, people would not travel anywhere. What, Jared, can you know, what would you do? You and Hannah, your wife, you guys are planning a trip in your power chair to fly. What are some things that you need to consider?
Most of the airlines have pretty good sections for accessibility on their website, but as soon as you book the trip, you got to let the airline know that you're a power chair user, what equipment you're bringing, how much does it weigh, the makeup of the batteries. When we get to the airport, you know, we got to get there early. You know you're going to be the first person on the plane and you're going to be the last person off. You get the maximum time at the airport every time you travel. And really, it's just over communicating everything. We put signage all over my chair, how to operate the motors, how you release the motors and turn the brakes on, how to disconnect the power. My wife ties the foot plates up so they're not flopping around. We put signs everywhere not to grab here. We have nylon straps that we loop through the four tie downs. And on the signs that we have on the chair, it tells everyone to lift from the blue straps. And we get, you know, blue or bright color straps so they stand out. Also, our phone numbers are on the chair everywhere. If anybody has a question, they can call us. Hannah, if they allow them at the airport, she will ride down the elevator with the grounds crew and explain everything about the chair to them. You know, she has to recline the back all the way down so it fits in the storage space. Usually when she's talking to the grounds crew, she will disconnect the joystick and tell them, you know, that it's kind of stuck in the mode that it's in, so they're not messing with power. It's a lot of legwork. It's a lot of prepping everyone. And at every turn of the corner, you're teaching somebody new to try to be a wheelchair expert. And in 2 minutes, you're going to have the exact same conversation.
So another question for you from a power chair user, because a good friend of mine travels a lot. I know you guys follow him. Curve Free with Corey Lee. So Corey mm-hmm. Woodard, it's actually his first and last name. Lee's his middle name. His mother always tells me that's kind of funny, but he's known as Corey Lee. I know one of the things he recently talked about on a trip that he did was a layover. What are the rights of someone who uses a wheelchair? Do they have to bring the power chair up? Because I know Corey also went viral with something with an airline who I'm not going to call out any airlines here to be negative, but how they were refusing to bring his chair directly to him on the jet bridge. So Jared, how can you prepare for a layover? I know layover is not ideal, but they're reality sometimes.
Anytime I get off the plane, I demand my chair. I need to be in my seating. That's just how it is. And I don't think it's really fair to blame any airline, because what we have found is that once you get to the airport, it's all contracted by the airport, everybody that's there. It doesn't really matter airline to airline, what I have found. So it's just finding good people and working with them. But there's not a really bad airline or a really great airline. They're just all kind of what they are.
Indeed. So, Christy, as you're prepping a manual chair, walk us through little bit of what that looks like.
Before we go into a manual chair, I have a couple of things just to add to what Jared said. I think that's some really super great information. But one thing that you also need to make sure you do when using a power chair, you do need to verify that the airline, not just the airline, sorry, the airplane that you are booking can accommodate your battery type. I've had two instances recently. One was a flight change where they changed to an aircraft that could not accommodate the lithium battery that my power chair user had. And another one where my clients upgraded their chair after purchasing their airfare and their battery could no longer be accommodated on their aircraft. So it is really, really critically important that you verify that your chair can actually be accommodated on the aircraft type before you have your tickets printed, before you confirm that purchase. You do have 24 hours after the purchase of your airline ticket to cancel for a full refund. So if you purchase them, immediately call and verify that that's going to work for your aircraft, or do it ahead of time before you even take that step. Anytime, and that's if you're traveling with a smart drive or any sort of battery at all. It's especially the lithium batteries that tend to be a problem on some of the aircraft. And it's the smaller aircraft usually where we run into that. And so another thing for all wheelchair users to do that I like to add on is you can also contact TSA Cares. And TSA Cares will, if they have the personnel, meet you at the beginning of that process to go through the security clearance and help guide you through it to make sure it's as smooth a process as possible. You still need to get your clearance, but they do try to give you a little extra time, a little bit of extra support when you use TSA Cares. And you can contact them up to 48 hours prior to travel. The sooner you do, the better. It's an underutilized service, but it's there for anybody with any kind of disability to be able to call and do that. And it's especially good to do if you travel with any extra equipment, if you have anything attached to your body. I have a pacemaker. So even if I could stand, I can't go through a regular metal detector. And it just kind of helped expedite that process a little bit. It reminds them that you need a little bit of extra support. So that's one thing I would add on. The next thing I want to talk about is the Air Carriers Access Act and some of the things that they give us rights for any flight that takes off from American soil or lands on American soil. The Air Carriers Access Act applies. And that does mean exactly what Jared was talking about, having that right to have your chair at the gateway. That is a right guaranteed to us by the Air Carriers Access Act. There is also written into that that your manual chair can be stowed in the cabin as long as it fits safely in the space. That mainly applies to collapsible chairs. There's a closet designated. And when you get on that plane, next time, take a look at that closet. You should see a little plate on it that says for manual wheelchair storage. And that means that I have the right to request that my chair is in the cabin with me. If it can safely fit in that closet, that's where my chair goes. And that helps me reduce airline damage to it because then it's no longer in cargo. It's in the cabin with me. And I know that it's been safely stowed. Nothing's going to roll around and hit it. It's much safer there. And if it can fit in the overhead bin, I will ask for it to be in the overhead bin if it doesn't fit in that closet. Not every airline has that closet on board, and not all of them can accommodate a rigid frame chair. My chair typically doesn't fit in a Southwest wheelchair storage closet because they're too narrow and I do not have a collapsible frame. But it fits in almost every American Airlines closet because of the way that closet is designed. And it can fit in the larger overhead bins on some of the newer aircraft where you can stow a rolling bag sideways instead of flat. My chair can come apart and fit in that very safely. Now, if an airline has 100 seats or more and does not have a closet, then I can request for my chair to be strapped into a seat on the aircraft and for it to be tied down in the aircraft on a seat. That is in the Air Carriers Access Act for me to be able to request that. Then they're able to strap it into that seat. And again, it gets to stay in the cabin. My favorite airline for that is Frontier. They even put it in this nice leather bag and then they strap it in and they take pictures for me. It's really, really fabulous.
I want to play a game now because I've never actually noticed before, but I'm totally going to look. It's like any listeners, if you notice and send us a picture, I mean, I might find a t-shirt or something to send you if you can send me the picture of that little plaque. Because I mean, I didn't start traveling until I started working for a wheelchair manufacturer over 10 years ago. And I've never noticed that. You would think somebody who has friends and family that utilize wheelchairs would have picked up on that. Never noticed it before. So play like a Where's Waldo game on the plane. I usually fly United, but yeah, okay. That'll be fun. All right, keep going.
It's really, really interesting. And a lot of times, you know, when I first started doing this, my home airport is San Antonio. And the first time that once we had moved here and I was going through the airport and I said I wanted to use that closet, their response was, well, usually that's where the flight attendants and pilots keep their things. And I just had to say firmly, but politely, I know that's where they keep their things. However, the Air Carriers Access Act states that if I request to use that closet and my chair can fit in it safely, then I am entitled to that space. And so there was a little bit of hesitation, a little bit of pushback that first time. And then the next time I showed up, they're like, good morning, Mrs. Durso. We've cleared the closet for you and it'll be ready for your chair. it's really interesting because they're asked so infrequently. Most of the gate crew and even the flight attendants don't even realize that that's a right that we're given. They don't really talk about it. Really, their training for wheelchair users is basically, here's where the onboard aisle chair is. This is where it's stowed. They are not forced to practice with the aisle chair or see how difficult it is to push or pull it down the aisle. It's just a basic, this is where it goes. There are certain things that we are supposed to have as wheelchair users. And Jared, I'm interested to hear how many times you've ever been given a personal safety briefing.
I don't think I've ever been given a personal safety briefing.
Yeah, I've been given it twice, and it is required by the Air Carriers Access Act. They are supposed to come over and give us a safety briefing that goes over how they would get us off the aircraft in case of an emergency. They're supposed to ask us if we have somebody there to assist us and to tell us what will happen if we have to deplane in the case of an emergency. I've been given that briefing twice ever, and I fly all different airlines. So again, That's something in the Air Carriers Access Act that we are supposed to get. It's really interesting. Again, they really don't know. They're not given enough training on how to accommodate those of us with disabilities. And it's not the flight attendant's fault. It's not really the gate Right. crew's fault. It's an issue with the overall industry not being provided this training. It's really interesting. The other thing that we need to make sure that we're doing is setting up our seating accommodations ahead of time. Do you want to be close to a bathroom, or do you want to be seated as far forward in the aircraft as possible? Do you need extra room because you deal with stiffness and you can't bend your knees as far back in a coach seat? Then you need to be calling the airline again as soon as you make your reservation. You are entitled to a complimentary seat for your disability. This is, again, part of the Air Carriers Access Act. You and one companion can get a complimentary seat assignment in an area that suits you best. You cannot upgrade your cabin, so you can't go from economy to first class, but you can be put more forward in the cabin than you would have been able to be placed if you were just going on and making your reservation, and you don't have to pay for that accommodations.
I was going to ask, so I'm thinking about the airlines when I travel, right, where you can, like, for this amount, you can sit here, but if you want extra leg room, go here. If you want extra, extra leg room, you can pay $55 extra. So is the leg room, is that in that part of the free upgrade? It's in the same cabin, but it's a free, okay. That's good to know.
Yeah, I usually get placed in the bulkhead seating, which is mm-hmm. that very front row of the coach cabin. Mm-hmm. And that usually is considered premium economy. It's the highest category in the coach cabin. It's the one where I'm going to have the most room for my legs to be able to move them and stretch them if I need to during the flight. That doesn't work for every wheelchair user. If you cannot get over the rail, the armrest on that first row, most of the time that front row doesn't have a removable or a movable armrest. So you may have to sit in the row behind that. For me, I prefer that row. I'm able to transfer myself and get over that armrest, so it's not a big deal for me. In fact, I prefer to move all the way to the window seat, so that way I can lean against that and lean back in case my muscles are too tired to hold myself up straight the entire flight. I usually request that front row on the window seat, and I just kind of lift myself and shimmy over all the way to the window seat. If you can't do that and you need to be able to slide transfer from the aisle seat, then choose the row behind that. And then you're still actually, not being dragged all the way down the aircraft.
Actually, I prefer the bulkhead seating. I'm 6'2", and if I'm not there, my knees are going to be drilling the seat in front of me. And as a quadriplegic, they will lift me into bulkhead seating. They will put me over the... You don't have to slide board it. They'll pick you up and put you in there.
They always ask me if I'm able to do it. And then they've usually said that they prefer me to be in the second row if I can't. But it's nice to know that they will do lift. Jared, do you use a transfer sling to do that? Do you usually have a transfer sling to do it, or you just have them lift?
Nope. I have them, they grab my wrists under my arms and under my legs. And, luckily I have strong shoulders, so there's no pain for me transferring like that. I know some of my friends that it's painful for them to transfer. They have very sensitive shoulders, and they do travel with a travel sling typically.
There's a great one produced by adapts.org. They've done a lot of work in this area, and it really does help make those transfers a little bit safer for those of you listening. I have this sling. I travel with it just in case I ever need it. It can pack up very small into your carry-on, or it can go in your medical bag when you're traveling, because your medical bag does not have a charge to it. It is an extra thing that you get to bring, again, granted to you by the Air Carriers Access Act. Any medical equipment you bring does not have a charge to it as long as it is packed individually. So I usually transfer with the Adapts transfer sling, and that if I needed assistance with that transfer, I would put that on the wheelchair first, transfer into that, and then be lifted by that instead of having to have them lift me by my shoulders or anything else. That's especially good if you don't have much use of your shoulders, or if you tend to dislocate or anything else. Having that transfer sling is an extra security there. It makes it a little bit easier, a little bit safer to transfer.
Cool. Yeah, we'll have to check that out. We'll drop that in the show notes too, the websites, in case people want to check out what the Adapts transfer sling is. All right. So I was going to get into, as we're kind of walking through our scenario, right? Rolling through our scenario of travel. So now we're on the flight. I know you two are happy to talk about everything. So let's go ahead and let's talk about the one awkward thing that people might be nervous to think about, going to the bathroom. Jared, how do you prepare if you're going to be on a long flight?
You bet. So, I mean, I used to dehydrate myself so I wouldn't have to go to the bathroom, which is not a healthy way to start out a trip. So what I've started doing is my wife will bring my nighttime catheter bag and we will just connect that on the flight so I have maximum urine drainage. I wear a diaper when I travel. You know, I get concerned about having an involuntary bowel movement. And when you're traveling, you know, sometimes I like to have drinks when we're traveling and you're having different food. And sometimes that can lead to stomach issues and stuff like that. So for the flight, you know, I typically just wear a brief. And that just alleviates a lot of the concerns. And then on top of the brief, I'm sitting on a travel Rojo cushion that's black, you know, so it hides, you know, if there's a little wet spot or something. But yeah, that's a real thing. As far as cathing goes, I know a lot of wheelchair users, we call it tenting. You know, you just make a little tent with your blanket while you're sitting in your seat in the wheelchair. And that's enough privacy to get done what you need to get done.
Gotcha. What about you, Christy?
So first, I want to say this is an issue we have to talk about, and nobody should really be embarrassed by this. This is like your skin color or your eye color. You don't have control over it. This is just a thing that we deal with, and the more we can be open and talk about it, the less shame we're going to feel, and I think that's really, really important. So for me, I am able to transfer into the lavatory on the aircraft, so as soon as I have the slightest sense that I need to go, I'm pressing my call button to call the flight attendant because I know it can take a while for them to get to me, to clear the aisle, to clear the restroom, and to figure out how to open that onboard aisle chair. Once they do that, I am transferred. My entire row has to stand up because, again, I like the window seat. They all have to clear the row. And then I transfer into the aisle chair and they figure out how to drag me all the way over there and get me situated up to the restroom. Usually I'm having to coach them on how to turn it and how to angle it and get it in there because it's a little bit of an awkward thing and they're not used to using it. Once I'm there, hopefully it's one of the restrooms that has two grab bars, one that's at an angle for me to reach over across my body and one that's lower down for me to grab with my other hand and I can pull up, twist, and transfer in. Sometimes it's a really awkward situation where they only have one bar and it's at the height of my chair and that makes it a bit more awkward. Thankfully, I'm still able to maneuver myself and get myself in there, but it is a lot harder. And so then I'm in there to use the restroom. And then when I'm finished, I just open up the door and they pull the chair back in there. I transfer back and get back to my seat. There are a lot of ways to do this, as Jared mentioned, and it is, I think the least safe method is that dehydration method. I know lots of people who do it because it's just so difficult, but it always makes me a little bit nervous because we can be prone to urinary tract infections and kidney infections and all of that anyway. So if there's any way you can avoid dehydrating yourself, I highly recommend it. Flying makes you dehydrated anyway. So please try to figure out a different way other than being dehydrated to use the restroom.
For sure. It's not the best method. Not at all. Yeah. I don't endorse it. I just admit that I did it.
We've all done things that we admit, but don't necessarily endorse. That's my high school years. So let's think about, okay, so we are ready to get off the plane. We know that we already covered the fact that if you're in the U.S., Air Carriers Act, you know, does require that they bring the chair to you at the gate. I threw a little like hitch in this where I said we're going to Europe. So, Christy, what happens in some of those countries that don't really have to follow the Air Carriers Act?
So, again, if you are flying from the U.S., the Air Carriers Access Act still applies when you land in that first country.
Okay.
So again, you'll still have your chair brought to you. And in a lot of places, even if you're not covered by the Air Carriers Access Act, they still bring your chair all the way to the gate for you. So that's the first thing, is getting your chair at the gate. And then usually there is somebody, if you want it, then there's somebody to assist you all the way from the gate to the baggage claim area and then to clear customs. If you don't need that service, which I usually don't, I'm usually able to just throw my bag on my lap, use my smart drive and get myself there, then that works. once you're there, that's when you have to figure out your transportation. Hopefully you've set that up well ahead of time so you know you're getting something accessible if you need it, or you have your transfer into your standard vehicle. And this is where you just really need to make sure you're advocating for yourself and getting what it is that you booked ahead of time or taking care of what you need. That's the most critical part, is any legwork you can do ahead of time, do first so you know what to expect when you land. If it's not there when you land and it's not what you need, then it's time to get on the phone with your supplier and have them send what you need there. And there are many places that have boots on the ground where we can set up the correct transportation for you and make sure that you're going to be accommodated.
Also, when you first get to your chair, you need to check it for any damage, because you need to report that before you leave the airport. It's usually right there by the baggage carousel. You need to report that and make sure that's all notated before you leave.
We're going to talk more about that in the next episode, because I know you both have had issues with that. But a couple of quick questions. I don't want to camp out on this too long. But so, yes, as soon as you notice it. But what is, because I specifically think, while she doesn't use a wheelchair, I am a Gen Xer. I talk about it all the time. And I could totally hear my mother being like, that's too minor. Don't report that, sweetie. What is too minor? Okay, I see y'all can't see it, but heads are shaking. So what should be reported?
Every such thing is too minor.
Single thing. Yeah. If your wheelchair has a scratch on it, aesthetics and functional, I shouldn't have to roll around. Nobody should have to roll in a chair that looks junky because they scratch it up and it just doesn't affect the functionality. If your wheelchair was brand new when you boarded that plane, it should look brand new when you get off the plane.
Point blank.
And even if you think that it's, even if you sit in it and you go, well, this feels a little bit different, you should report that too. This isn't feeling right. It feels like something has shifted and I need to get it fixed. I'll give you a great example of this for my seat back. I've had my seat back replaced now 3 different times, and I report it every single time, because if it has even what looks like just cosmetic damage, I don't know if it's only cosmetic damage. I don't know how much weight they put on that backrest. I have no way of knowing that. So if I notice that the cushion is frayed where it wasn't frayed prior to my trip, I'm definitely reporting that, because I can no longer trust the integrity of that backrest. Absolutely. I don't know if somewhere they damaged it in a place that I can't see it. So I'm going to report it and ask for a new backrest to make sure that I maintain the integrity of that backrest.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, so last question about the airport. Is there recourse if you don't? Because here's the thing. If you're like a lot of folks, especially if you're a first time traveler, that adrenaline's probably going, you know, especially if you're in a power chair, even the person you may have with you on the trip, y'all might just be like, oh, got to think about all the details. What if you, because this happened to a friend of mine, what if you leave and you're like, oh man, like you get to the hotel and you're like, shoot, this is messed up. Is there a recourse? Is there like a ticking clock? I have no idea. That's why I'm asking. Or do you have to stay on property in order to make that claim?
No, it definitely goes easier if you get the steps in place while you're at the airport, but I have left the airport and filed a claim afterwards. It's just a longer conversation and a more of a pain in the butt, but it's still doable.
Okay, very good. Okay, so now we're going to talk about where you are, because I don't want this podcast to go for 3 hours. Now we're going to talk about, we are arriving at the hotel. So we know you've already arranged for everything. So by the time you get to the hotel, Jared, it's going to be that perfect suite that you and Hannah had imagined, right? You're going to have all the roll-in shower. All that stuff's going to be perfect, right? So I would say it very sarcastically.
Yeah. But
what would you recommend that someone do as soon as they roll through the door of the hotel that you're planning, or wherever you're planning to stay?
Well, I mean, usually we call. After you leave the airport, we call the hotel. The steps along this whole thing, you are confirming and reconfirming details over and over and over. Every time you touch base with the airport, every time you touch base with the hotel, every time you touch base with the rental, you're confirming all the details. As soon as we get to the front desk, you're reconfirming the details. For me, a lot of the ADA stuff with the room is not important. What I really am looking for is a roll-in shower. Everything else is not that big of a deal. I want a king size bed, because we bring my dog and my wife, and we all share a bed. So if 3 of us are going to sleep, we need a king size bed. And if I'm going to get clean, I need a roll in shower. And I'm reconfirming that as soon as we get there.
Christy, I know you've got more than 2 cents to say on this one too, from your vast experience.
Absolutely. Well, the first thing is to go back to the pre-legwork. Before getting to the hotel, before the trip even starts, I've already asked for pictures of the shower setup. I've asked for pictures of the bed height. I've checked with them well ahead of time to make sure that the room actually accommodates me. And I'm calling 2 days before to reconfirm that they've blocked that accessible room for me and that it's going to be there when I arrive. Those are critically important details that cannot be missed. So once I arrive, the first thing I'm going to do is check to see if they have a lowered counter where I can check in, because most of the time I'm traveling by myself. I don't have somebody taller than me checking in with me. So being at that ambulatory height counter is really, really awkward for me. So I'm going to look for that lowered counter. And 99% of the time, they're not going to offer that to me. So I'm going to ask them to go over to that lowered counter to check me in. Once we're there, we'll go through the check-in process, do all the things. Then I'm going to ask for an escort to my room. And this is really important to me to ask for, because I want them to see, one, whether or not I'm able to open the door by myself. Two, to see whether or not that shower head is in place. Three, to see if I need any furniture moved. Is the bed height at the right height? No, it's too high. Okay, could you please remove the box spring or set the mattress on the floor so I can transfer in and out? Is there furniture blocking the window? Okay, could you please go ahead and move that table out so that that way I can open and close my own window? Is the soap dispenser wall mounted and can I reach it from my shower chair? No, okay, I'm going to need you to bring some soaps that I can grab so I can do that independently. Those are all things that I have to check for, and it's much easier if I just ask for an escort to my room at the very beginning. Then I'm getting all of those problems solved right at the offset. If the door is too heavy for me to open, I'll ask for them to send somebody from maintenance with an Allen key so they can adjust the pressure up at the top, and then I'm more likely to be able to open and close it myself. And then for all of those other things, they may be able to do it right there on the spot. They may need to send somebody from maintenance to do an adjustment.
That's a really good point. We always... either my wife or I, we go and put eyes on the room when we first get there before you drag all your stuff up there and do all, like, let's make sure this works for us for sure. That's a really good point.
So what happens if it's not? I mean, I know that, Christy, you were mentioning to me recently that you have, you know, people call you at all hours of the night, you know, as a travel agent. This is why, and we talked about this before, like, I didn't really know much about travel agents before our last call, but this is why now, like, I definitely, if I was planning a big trip, I for sure would have a travel agent, because you need another advocate there to help you. So what is the recourse? You get there and this stuff is not, it's not okay, but at 10 o'clock at night is when you arrived.
So then it depends on the person. Can you make it work for one night? Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then go ahead and stay there that night. And the next morning, we're going to move you to a different hotel that has better accommodations. And I've had to do this with several travelers where the room wasn't great. It didn't really work for them super well. So we just moved them the next day so they could be better accommodated. And we just set that up for them and take care of all of that. Usually, I've never had a time where we weren't able to get a refund on the nights that they paid for that they can't use. And we just switch them over to a better fitting property the next day. I'll do all of that legwork for them. They don't have to do anything. Usually I've done enough legwork ahead of time to where that doesn't happen, but it has happened a couple of times where we've expected something and we were given something else because they gave away the other room or whatever reason, or they had pictures that didn't actually depict what was really there or whatever the scenario could be.
And it's been our same experience. You know, there's times where it doesn't work out and it's a pain in the butt, but you usually end up saving a little bit of money, not enough to make it worth it, but you're not paying the full price that you would have for the accessible room that you were expecting. And then, you know, like you said, you usually burn the next morning making new accommodations, moving, but then, you know, you put it back together and it's okay. That's a real thing that happens. And, you know, that's, you just got to roll with the punches.
All right. Well, I think that's some great recommendations for things to set yourself up for success the best way that you can. We could do numerous other episodes. I've got so many other questions that popped in my head, so we'll save those for another day. But just to wrap up this one, I think for our next episode, we are for sure going to talk about what are some of those mishaps, because some folks might be listening to this going, oh my gosh, that wasn't my experience. And so we definitely want to, and hopefully Jared Hanna will be able to join us for that one, because I'm sure you guys have got some stories. We're not going to make light of anything, but we were going to make sure that you guys kind of hear the reality of it, quite honestly. And then, you know, maybe one day we'll come back, we'll talk about cruises, because today we just talked about flights. But there is a lot to consider when it comes to travel for anyone, but especially folks who utilize mobility devices to assist them getting around. So Jared and Christy, thank you so much for being a part of this. It was so much fun talking travel. I know we'll have you guys back on again here soon, but yeah, I think that's about it for this episode. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you again. This has been so much fun once again, and I can't wait till the next time.
Thank you for listening to Wheelchair Nerds, presented by ProMobile. Today's episode was brought to you by...
The Permobil Corpus Seating System is designed to help you effortlessly achieve your optimal position with the assistance of technology. With up to 45 degrees of active reach, forward tilt capability of up to 14 inches of active height seat elevation, active reach and active height work harmoniously together to bring your world within reach. The seating system is constructed with quality from the ground up to ensure that you can easily find your perfect position to tackle any task at hand. Permobil Corpus Seating System is available on the F3, F5, F5VS, M3, M5, and MVS.
Thanks for checking out this episode. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single one. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Our handle is @WheelchairNerds. And tell your friends about our podcast too. Oh, and we really appreciate it if you give us a 5-star rating and leave a comment sharing what your favorite thing about Wheelchair Nerds is. Last but not least, if you have a topic you'd like us to discuss or know a great guest, hey, it could even be you. You could be that next great guest. Send us an email. Tell us why. You can reach us at wheelchairnerds@permobil.com or DM us on one of our social platforms. We love hearing from you.